Welcome back to the MediaCorp Minute Podcast. My name is Josh Langmaid, and today I sat down with Peter Dockin with RE/MAX Results. We dove into an awesome topic today around building a brand new home and how it can be a lot more affordable than you think. This is a good one. Stay tuned. Peter, you and I got connected probably close to a month ago now.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah.
It was a mutual friend, business owner, who was actually on this podcast before.
Oh, cool.
Mr. Scott Elder.
Yeah.
And
wonderful guy.
Had to shout him out.
You know? Yeah, for sure.
But
that's who we use for our photos on our listings and things. He's a great resource for me for technology.
Yeah.
He knows a lot.
He's a hoot, you know. So
he is a That's a great word for Scott.
Yep, that's right. Well, no, I gotta say, I'm pretty excited about the podcast. One, to have you on, but two, just the topic that we're kind of talking about today. You know, we're gonna jump into a little bit about, you know, your journey, kind of your story in real estate, but then specifically about home building.
Yeah.
You know, and me being interested in building home myself, I was like super excited to chat today. And you and I were going to actually have this conversation off camera. And I was like, well, you know what? Like, why don't we just have a podcast about it? Because what I'm wondering, I'm assuming a lot of people are wondering as well.
I think so too. Yeah.
So, but no, I'm excited. But I did want to start just kind of going back and just in your career, a little bit about your background, like, you know, where you grew up. Was there college involved? Why real estate?
Yeah, so grew up in Kasson. My wife and I both did. You know, had a wonderful high school experience.
Yeah.
The small town,
you know,
70s and 80s growing up. And then I went off to college at Gustavus in St. Peter for 4 years. And
what was the degree in?
Yeah, so I was a political science and philosophy major.
Okay.
Which pretty much meant I was getting into sales.
Yep.
Yeah. I didn't really know it at the time that that's what it meant. All I knew is I didn't have to take math or science. So I graduated and I went, what am I going to do with this? And I actually started a business in Rochester, a painting business.
Okay.
We did residential new construction primarily.
Yeah.
And you know, it was back in the 90s, the boom of the 90s. We were doing 150 houses a year. It was ridiculous. That was a great learning experience, you know, having employees and things like that. I enjoyed it very much until I didn't. And then it was time to go on to
how long
the white collar world. You know, 6 or 7 years,
okay.
Something like that.
Yep.
And I started it when I was in college and just, you know, summer doing exteriors and, you know, scraping stuff and things like that. So it was a great introduction to being a business person.
Right.
It really was. So.
When you learn so much just by doing it, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like incredible lessons.
Yeah.
It's like you got to go through it. Yeah. You know, you can sit and read and hear about it and, you know, listen to things, but it's just way different when you're going through it.
You have to have perseverance and you have to be willing to fail forward.
Yep.
There's really no option when you throw yourself into a circumstance like that. So
did you transition from there right into real estate or was there something else?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I actually became a stockbroker. My dad was a stockbroker when I was growing up and retired as a stockbroker. And I was very attracted to that business model.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, you know, if I can make good money as a painting contractor, which you're not supposed to make good money as a painting guy back then. I think I could do really well as a business that's designed to make money.
Right.
Well, it was not a great fit for me. it was the first time I'd ever had an employer.
Yeah.
I'm a terrible employee. And I just didn't, you know, I struggled selling something that you couldn't quantify it. It wasn't, you know, it just, I was a broker over 9/11. So, you know, my clients' portfolios went down by 50%, 75%. I mean, it was difficult. And then it just became, I had we had three or four kids at the time, and my wife was a stay-at-home. It just became very difficult to pay the bills. So I had an opportunity then. I'd left that profession, and I learned a lot about the value of money and the flow of money and different things like that during that process. And then I had an opportunity to get into real estate, and kind of just taken off from there.
So when you got into real estate, you know, was it slow going at the start, or was it a pretty fast ramp up into things?
You know, for me, it was a pretty fast ramp up actually. Yeah. It was during a time where the business was very uncomplicated, very uncomplicated. It wasn't, you know, a one page contract, but I'm pretty sure it was a 3-page contract. Uh-huh. And it was really connecting with people, and it was face to face. It was open houses. It was, you know, just kind of doing the work.
Right.
And back then, hard work equaled success.
Yep.
Whereas now that's important, but it has to be targeted hard work. Uh-huh. You can't replace hard work, but it's, you know, there's just so many different avenues to do it. But, you know, when I started 20 years ago, this is kind of the way you did it. Yeah. It just was. Yep. So the harder you worked, the better you did. And, you know, I was having four kids. I was scared enough that I worked very hard.
Well, I feel like the other thing too nowadays is like there's so many, not even just options too, but there's also like so many voices. You know, you're hearing information from, you know, everywhere, you know, all these different gurus and people online to in person to, you know, there's just so many different things. And I was listening to, what's his name? Patrick Bedavid. Mm. You heard of him?
No.
Big sales guy. And he's like, you know, we're in this time where, you know, it was all about like, hey, get the right information out there. And now there's so much information out there that you really got to like focus on who am I going to listen to? Who am I going to take advice from?
Yeah.
Because there's no lack of information nowadays. Like it's everywhere.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I thought that was really interesting because like we think about a lot of different business topics too, you know, and like one being what we're going to talk about today is like, well, who do you decide you're going to listen to around a certain topic?
Right.
You know, and why them?
Right.
And so I think that's super important today because you get all these people talking about things they've never done.
Yeah.
You know, or experienced or actually went through themselves. But, you know, they're a guru or a coach or, you know.
Yeah. And you're a guru or a coach because you call yourself one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the criteria for it at this point. And and it's, you know, we all know it's about getting clicks and it's about getting exposure. And boring doesn't get you a lot of exposure. Uh-huh. Looking at, you know, mid to long-term trends does not get you a lot of exposure. You know, we've gone from, you know, maybe annual market cycles down to quarterly market cycles with the market. And, you know, now it's, you know, daily, if not hourly, where, you know, things are shifting and turning and ultimately they're all going to come back to the same answer. It's just how much noise you want to listen to and what you want to cut through the noise.
Yeah. How many things distract you along
the
way.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So I wanted to kind of, wanted to ask too, you know, with your real estate journey, when did you get into more of the helping people build homes?
Yeah. So, you know, having that background of being a painting contractor and being around new construction and stuff. So I had relationships with builders. I had relationships with contractors. And you know, this is a small community. You know, Rochester is the biggest small town in the world. Yep. And so those relationships just really naturally tied over. So I started doing new construction fairly early in the process, but it was really, it wasn't as an advisor. It was, you know, I just opened doors and I just opened different doors than other people did. Yeah. So I opened new construction doors, but I wasn't really, you know, understanding the value and the process of it. It was just, you know, this is another option type of a thing. So it was, however, I had some opportunities through the years as I did a fairly good job at it. And so you got more business with more builders and you know, was able to turn that into more of a business model than than a sales model.
Yep.
No, and I, you know, before we even start diving into specifically, you know, what that looks like to build a home for somebody, I want to give a little context too. You know, and one of the reasons I was interested in our conversation today was like, you know, like running, you know, I've been running this business here for almost 7 years now, and you know, it's been fun to grow, and you know, we're looking at, well, we don't want to keep renting. You know, we're renting a brand new home, which is nice.
Yeah.
But we're still renting it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, we want to own, you know, our home and be building equity and things like that. But we look and we're like, the home that we would like to build, you know, this dream home, this forever home, is with, you know, a lot of land and, you know, a large home. And like, we're in the multiple $1 million, you know, figures. And it's like, well, that's not realistic right now.
Yeah.
You know, maybe down the road, but not right now.
Yeah.
So I kind of wrote off building, you know. I was just like, well, you know, I'd like to one day, but it's just not feasible right now.
Right.
So then we start looking at the market and all the, you know, the homes for sale. And it's like this, you know, high interest rate and, you know, kind of like post-COVID pricing that was still seemed elevated. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I'm looking at it like, wow, like I have to pay more than a home's might be even worth and pay a high interest rate if I want to do that right now. Mm-hmm. So then that doesn't look super attractive to me, you know, and I haven't broken down all the numbers to see, you know, why or what, but, and then you and I meet.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're talking about, well, you can get into it, you know, fairly, like, a lot lower than some people think, you know, for a certain budget.
Yeah.
Not that it's cheap, but it's like, you know, it might be more affordable than
there are strategies out there that make it more affordable, make it more feasible for people.
Yep.
Yes.
So then I'm like, well, that's, you know, that's cool. Cause it feels like building is maybe, you know, back on the table now.
Yeah.
And I feel like when I'm building, you know, obviously there's going to be certain pros and cons at a certain price point, but at the same time, if that's a great option and we can live in it for a period of time while we build equity and save and do things for this dream home one day, you know, I think that's just one more step closer to it.
Yeah.
So,
let me take a step back and just talk about home ownership.
Okay.
Period.
Yep.
Before we get into the new construction
part of it.
My wife and I, Christy and I, we bought the house that we live in now, we bought it in 2002.
Okay.
And so we owned, when I was a stockbroker, we owned that house during the 2008, 2009, 2010 crash. So in 2010, so we'd lived there for 8 years, our house was worth less than we had paid for it. Was that a good investment? Well, you know, it was a bad investment if you had to sell. It was a bad investment if you had to sell, but we didn't have to sell.
Right.
So we just rode it out. And now our house, we paid $240 for it. And I would guess, you know, well, I guess, this time last year, our house was probably about $500,000. Mm-hmm. Now it's probably $450,000 to $475,000. It has gone down a little bit in value, but ultimately it's doubled in value.
Right.
And we've bought down the mortgage. You know, we're fortunate enough that we don't have a mortgage payment anymore, mm-hmm. you know, so that's one of the struggles that I think, or one of the concepts that's really just not being embraced right now is, you know, this, we're very much in this, there's just a lot of variables out there right now. There's a lot of indecision. There's a lot of, you know, things that we just don't know what are going to happen. What we almost certainly know is that housing pricing is going to go up over time. And, you know, what is your entry point? And so I'm 55, you're 30. You're not getting into your dream home before I get into mine. You know, so this is not a instant gratification process. It is for certain people that go to school for 8 years. And, you know, I mean, there's no question there's a demographic for that. But you and I, that's not the process. Uh-huh. And, you know, quite frankly, that's a newer concept to your generation that we're just going to skip, you know, and we're going to live like our parents live. I mean, who does that? You know, that's just, that's never been a generational expectation until the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the important part is to get started.
Right.
It's to get started. And that's the challenge that I think we're not addressing effectively enough, as a industry, as a society, you know, but that's a transformation that I think is coming soon. So the important part of housing to me, in Minnesota over the last 10 years, houses have appreciated almost 80%.
Wow.
So, you know, even if you're talking conservatively, that's 6% a year. And you know, one of the interesting parts being a stockbroker and being a real estate agent is just the leverage ability of home ownership. You know, when I was a stockbroker, if you wanted $500,000 to grow for you at 5%, you had to have $500,000, you know, and you didn't own an asset. You owned an idea, you owned a concept, you owned a, you know, hope and a prayer. It's a great investment over time. There's no question. But it's a very different investment. Whereas with real estate, I mean, you can legitimately get into real estate for 5% down, and, or there's 3% programs, whether that's in your best interest or not, that's part of the exploration process. Mm-hmm. But it's just the entry point is so much easier to achieve. So the, you know, if you look at your cash on cash return in real estate versus the brokerage market or other things, it's not even close. I mean, it's not even close. Because you're able to, the cash entry point is just so different. So getting started in real estate, and one of the things that I have found and am finding in my business is just how much more valuable the new construction process is for buyers, potentially, rather than used housing. Mm-hmm. And there's always going to be a purpose for used housing. But right now, the new construction, I believe, in our market is just a better value. It just really is. So, you know, that's kind of the message that I'm trying to, you know, communicate with people.
Yeah. No, I like that a lot. And I think, you know, I'm in a... coaching program too, called C12. And, you know, I'm sitting at a table with, you know, owners and CEOs that are, you know, further along in their journey than I am. You know, I'm the youngest one.
Yeah. I remember those days. I used to be the youngest
one. Yeah. Right.
I'm the old guy.
Right. but they're always saying, like, you know, like, you have to own real estate, you know, be it residential or commercial, like you have to own real estate.
Yeah.
And for multiple reasons. But I have always been hesitant because I feel like this lack of understanding, you know. Mm-hmm. And if I don't understand it, I don't want to just jump into it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's something that, I don't know, if it's just failing enough times in business and, like, fixing things, that it just makes you understand, like, hey, this is what I'm good at, this is what I'm not good at, and I don't really want to, like, jump into something that I don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's... that could be the case for a lot of people, is just this lack of awareness, lack of understanding, misconceptions, things like that.
Yeah, there's no question that you know, I don't spend a lot of time on social media. I don't, it's just not my generation's thing necessarily. But when I do go on it, I'm like, stop asking each other questions. None of you know the answers. Yeah. So you're just recycling the same questions. Ask someone that knows the answers. Yeah. You know, and so it really has changed our business, for the agents that are being successful. It has really changed more into an advisory business. It's not unlike you know, when I was a broker and you were a financial advisor, right?
Yep.
Well, this is the number one asset for almost everybody, yep. Is your home. And so, you know, getting advice and direction and, you know, you got to have an opinion. I mean, what do people hire me for? They hire me for my experience. They hire me to say, you know, we walk into houses and I'm like, no, we can do better than this. But we also walk into houses and I'm like, this is the best you're going to do. Yeah. And if this isn't what you're looking for, I'm not clear what you're looking for. But just having a being comfortable giving an opinion and, and saying, this is what you should, I'm a big action step guy. You know, this is what you need to do to get to this point. And, and so people like yourself, you might have the financial ability to do it, but you don't have the comfort level to do it. So you're probably a buyer that you could probably, if you really focused on it, could probably do something in the next 6 to 12 months. That's really not the case for most people, the Gen Z and millennial, which is really the audience that we should be targeting at this point. You know, they're renters. They typically are fairly well educated. They have good jobs. I have four Gen Z young adult children, none of whom own a house. And one of them who certainly could financially, one of them that would be borderline, and then two that just aren't ready yet. But it's how do you, so you're kind of that, you could do it if you wanted to, I would guess.
There's the people too that need to prepare it.
So for so many people, what they struggle with is, you know, well, here's my debt.
Right.
So how does my debt factor into this? And how does my, you know, individual situation, and that's where we really get into the conversation of, okay, so, you know, do you understand your credit score? Do you understand what that means for you and your ability to get better rates and things like that? So if your credit score is this, you know, you're going to get a higher rate or you're not going to qualify. So how do we get your score to this that you need to? And it's not tomorrow, you know, and I tell people all the time, if you're 3 to 6 to a year out, that's wonderful. I mean, I'd love to work with you, but I'm going to be selling real estate in a year from now. And I'm going to be selling real estate 3 years from now. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be selling real estate 5 years from now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are people that you just got to sit down with them and say, this is, you know, all you need, you know, there are a lot of situations where really what you need is the motivation to do what you need to do to get there. And it needs to be, for some people, it's a shorter process. But for some people, it's a longer process. But that process doesn't get shorter the longer you ignore it. Right. You know, I mean, you, if you're on a 5-year time frame and you wait 2 years, you might still be on that 5-year time frame because you just, you either started planning the wrong things, the wrong priorities, you know, what are strategies to knock down some of that debt and to prioritize some of that debt and things. Those are the kind of conversations that I love to have with people and just sit down and say, okay, if you're going to do it, this is how you're going to do it.
Well, it's kind of that action step that you were saying is like, you like the action steps, you know, the, hey, you know, if you want to do this in 2 years and 3 years, what does this actually look like?
And then you kind of get into the funnel of the communication, right? You're watching the podcasts and the people that I recommend, you know, the links that I recommend and say, listen to what this person is saying. And so you start educating yourself. You know, I will say the same thing, you know, with technology, right? So I met with Scott to do certain technology things. He's like, yeah, that's not what I do. So he said, you got to talk to Josh. And that's how we ended up in this room, right? Is if I would have just spun my wheels and guessed and gone online and tried to figure out how to get into this room, it would not have happened. And I would have made 5 bad decisions before I made the right decision. And that's okay, but it's not necessary. You know, I just asked somebody. and so it's no different to me, you know, if you're wondering how to do it, wondering how to get started, want to do it, maybe you can do it now, maybe you can't, but you have to start the process. And that's really, we're seeing in the Gen Z and the millennials, you know, for the longest time, it's quite different than for me, Gen X. Our goal was to own a house, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, shortly after you were married, you bought a house.
Yeah.
And now they're that younger generation, which, by the way, I think is going to be the most powerful generation we've ever seen. I mean, it's just their ability to, they're very socially conscious. They're very, whether you agree or not with what they believe in, largely, they're very driven when it comes to that stuff. They're very motivated in certain ways, just not really towards home ownership yet. Uh-huh. But we're seeing as this generation gets older, they're getting married. You know, they're making lifestyle choices that are directing them towards home ownership and out of the rental realm. And then they start having kids and all of a sudden now your school district matters to you, you know, so, right. So you're putting down roots for a lot of different reasons. and we're starting to see that happen with this generation, but they want no maintenance. They want, you know, and that's where the new construction comes in that's the closest thing that you can get to renting. You know, it just is. It's so low maintenance. It's so, you can define your expenses. You can really budget in new construction so much differently than you can with existing.
Right. Like you're not buying a project.
You're not buying a project, you know, the younger generation, the first house we bought, I'm not even sure you could get permits for it anymore today. But we wanted a project.
Yeah.
But projects were affordable back then. Now it's like, you're going to put more money into your house than you paid for the house.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's where it's not only the time, it's the financial burden of it. You know, can you spend $20,000 to replace a roof? Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? You don't get that on a 30-year mortgage. If you're lucky, you get 24 months financing on it. So you gotta have the money, you know, right. And if your furnace goes out, is, you know, what, $5,000-$7,000, whatever, different things like that. So people look at the want to's, in existing and say, oh, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. Well, it's very hard to calculate the have to's. Uh-huh. And your furnace is a have to. You know, you just don't, it goes out, you don't have much choice. And that's that again, the new construction is very much closer to the renting process.
Well, that's kind of like one of my first questions, you know, really setting the stage here, like, is building right for you, you know, and being like, what are the pros and cons of building versus buying?
Yeah.
And you already hit on a couple, but, you know, what does that look like when you're explaining it to somebody?
Yeah, so I think that again, we want to establish what are your goals, what's a legitimate process for you. You know, I have houses, new construction houses right now that are for sale for under $400,000. You know, and I mean, people just I think people kind of jump to the 650 and up price point when it comes to new construction, and again, your first home, whether you think it or not, is not your dream home. This is not where you're going to live forever.
Yep.
Look at it as an investment.
Yep.
This is an investment into my future. How do I best build equity and build wealth in my family? And, you know,
well, even something that you said when we were meeting was like, that stuck with me. It was like, you're building your first home for the next buyer. You know, it's not for you. It's for like the person buying your home.
Yeah.
I was like, that was interesting.
Yeah.
It's like
every house you buy, you're buying it for two people. You're buying it for yourself and you're buying it for the next buyer.
Uh-huh.
You want to buy something that, you know, I get people that have very specific criteria and I'm just like, okay, but do you understand? I met with someone who was looking at building just the other day and they wanted to have one bedroom on the main. And I'm like, okay, that fits your lifestyle. Well, we're going to live in it until we die. Yeah, but your kids still have to sell. Someone has to sell that house, you know. And if you build something that's so specific, or you buy something that's so specific to your needs, now there are situations where that's absolutely right. And and in this situation, it's not a right or wrong. It's just do you understand that you know you're really committing yourself to a certain demographic of buyers when you go to sell. That's one of the things you want to keep in mind is, and along those lines, one of the advantages that I think about with new construction or have experienced with new construction, you know, if you buy a 10-year-old house, right? So it's got a 10-year-old furnace, a 10-year-old roof, 10-year-old windows, 10-year-old flooring, everything's good, right? There's really probably nothing you have to replace. And you live there for 10 years. Well, now you have a 20-year-old furnace and you have a 20-year-old roof and you have 20-year-old carpet and you have 20-year-old cabinets and you have, so how much money do you have to invest in your house to get it to the point where, because now the next buyer, you know, all that stuff probably doesn't need to be replaced yet,
right?
But the next buyer, I mean, at some point, someone has to replace those things. Yep. So it's going to discount the value of your house. Whereas if you buy new construction, you still have, now you have a, 10 years later, you have a 10-year-old furnace and you have a 10-year-old roof, 10-year-old windows. You have, you know, the most, at the time, the most modern technology and the best codes and things like that. So the product that you're selling at the end, when you're going to the next phase, it's just a better product for the next buyer. So we're going to have a much bigger buyer pool of people that, again, there's very little work that needs to be done, even after 10 years in new construction. Whereas an existing, you know, if you buy a 10-year-old house and you're selling a 20-year-old house, that's a, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I believe it's my job to give people perspective on that. And then they can make the decision that they want. There's no question that existing housing is appropriate for certain people. There's no question. But it's also, there's no question that it may not be, just because of the forced expenses that you have.
What do you think some of the biggest misconceptions around building a new home right now are?
Well, I think it's interesting. You know, in Rochester, there are a few agents that do a lot of new construction, and there are a lot of agents that talk people out of doing new construction. You know, they don't necessarily have the relationships. They don't understand the process. You know, it gets right down to, you know, they, you know, can they afford to wait 7 months to get paid? You know, there's a lot of things that go into this conversation. And I think the biggest one is they just don't understand the process, and it's a completely different sales process.
Yep.
You know, adding new construction, it's not making your toolbox bigger. It's a different toolbox.
Yep.
It's now you have two toolboxes. It's a completely different sales process. And you know, the newer agents or the younger agents or agents that don't do that kind of stuff, they just don't have the experience in it. It's not that they're not a good agent. They just, you know, don't understand it. So I think that very common misperceptions are cost overruns, right? So you're gonna write a contract for $400,000 and at closing it's gonna be $450,000.
Right.
In 20 years, I've sold, you know, a lot of new construction. I've never once gone to a closing where any overage was not produced by the buyer, upgrading their lighting, upgrading their flooring, you know, making decisions along the process. We want to add a fireplace. Yep, that's going to cost more than the purchase agreement. So with the builders that I work with, that's just not what happens. And does it happen with other builders? Maybe, but I think that's somewhat limited. There's some new builders in town that I would be a little bit cautious about. But the builders that have been here a long time and do it. And then, you know, the time overruns. Oh, it's going to take you, you know, they say it's going to take 5 months and it's going to take a year and a half. I mean, that's really not all that realistic anymore either. I mean, we can pretty much determine your closing date on the date of purchase agreement.
Interesting.
So, you know, those are two of the big, and then of course, and this is realistic. I mean, new construction is more expensive. It's more expensive to get into. The entry point is higher, but the holding costs, I believe, of new construction are less. Mm-hmm. You don't have to come up with the $20,000 for the roof. You don't have to come up with the $5,000 for the furnace, you know, different things like that. So you kind of, you know, it's kind of a set it and forget it. This is your mortgage payment. And as long as you can afford this, that should be the majority of what your expenses are through this process. And that's the realization. You can almost see it happening in people's heads, you know, as you're talking about it and they're going, oh yeah, that makes sense. And oh yeah, that makes sense. And it's not a better perspective on the housing market. It's just different. It's just a different approach. It's just, I have different experiences with that, that I believe that that's the best investment that you can make is in new construction right now. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say that new construction might be 15 to 20% higher than existing. But so is your resale. Mm-hmm. You know, you're passing that along.
So you're getting that back.
You're getting that back. Plus for sure. So
when you're talking like, you know, building a home, but more of the entry level, building a home, maybe sub 500,000.
Yeah.
You know, how much does somebody need to realistically be making to make that?
Thank you for that question. You didn't tell me you were going to ask me that question. Yeah. You know, again, there are so many variables involved in that. And that's really where that's the conversation, right?
Is probably like the debt to income ratio is huge.
Yeah, it's driven off of debt to income ratios. And I'm not even remotely a mortgage expert. Right. What I'm really good at is connecting you with the right mortgage person.
Yep.
So, you know, we have a network of mortgage people that are able to do different things. So college debt is a big issue. You know, we went through 4 years where we were told it was going to be forgiven, which isn't going to happen, is never going to happen. However, are there going to be programs where it's more driven by your income versus what you owe and things? I mean, they're going to have to do something to soften that load on people, you know, credit card debt, different things like that. So it really depends on what your fixed expenses are going into the process. But I would say, you know, so that I think the median income in Olmsted County family household income is around 120,000. Mm-hmm. That's easily, you can easily do it for that. Mm-hmm. To qualify for some of these programs that are out there, it's typically 80% of the median, 75% of the median. So you're, you know, low 90s household income. So if you have two people in the house that are making $50,000, for instance, you would be, you know, depending on your debt load, you would be in the ballpark of what you can do. And then it's just really, you know, I tell people that, you know, if you're motivated and you have a job and you pay your bills, let's talk. Uh-huh. You know, if you don't have a job and you don't pay your bills, go talk to somebody else. I don't want to talk to you. Yeah. But other than that, we can at least plan for the possibility, you know, and does the plan come? I don't know. But even if you plan for the home ownership possibility and you fall short and you're able to rent better, rent in a nicer neighborhood, rent a house instead of an apartment, you know, whatever. It's just, it's about taking those steps and just starting. So,
you know, one of the things that I think about is how long do I need to be in a home to make it worth it? So if I went and built a home in the next 12 months, like I'm a guy that likes to have a new vehicle every 3 years because I'm just like, I just get sick of it, you know? And with a home, 10 years to me, you know, seems like, whoa, that's a long time. Like,
yeah.
I want to be out of that sucker in 5.
Yeah.
Is that feasible to build a home, be out of it in 5 years and still come out on top?
So, again, I'm going to go back to my personal example. Mm-hmm. I was 32, I think, when we bought our house. It was the same idea. We're going to be here in 3 years. We're going to turn it. We're going to make $100,000 and we're going to go into the next house and we're going to do that again and again. And, you know, so in a historical perspective, that's a realistic expectation. In that example, it wasn't, because we didn't we were upside down, you know. So if you're looking at just say 4%, that would be a conservative, you know, again, much less than the last 10 years, which were closer to 6 or 7% appreciation. You know, so if you're there for 5 years and, you know, we can get into the whole compounding interest conversation and the paying down your mortgage conversation and things like that. It's a bit of a moving target, but you would do, typically you're going to do very, very well. You're going to be experiencing 20 to 25% appreciation, the tax write-offs that are involved in it. You know, there's so many advantages to, mm-hmm. to home ownership, beyond, the appreciation that, you know, when you go to sell it and it costs you, you know, I can't say a number, but it costs you an amount, to get out of your house, that almost it in my experience, it's skewed the other way where people go, I cannot believe how fast we grew appreciation, you know? So they were anticipating they were going to have to be there for 5 to 7 years to get to 100,000 equity. And all of a sudden at 3 years, they're sitting on 100,000 equity. And so it's really variable. However, if you don't go in, you're not going to experience it.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the differentiators between, you know, you and I, middle class and the 1%, 2%, they get out of investments at the beginning and they get into investments at the beginning. So, you know, you and I, we follow the trend and it's probably gone down 70% before we realize it's time to get out. Mm-hmm. And it's probably gone up 70% before we realize it's time to get in. And real estate's the same thing. It's, you know, so right now the conversation, so much of the conversation is about interest rates, right? So right now you're kind of 6.5 to 7%. So let's just say 6.5%. And you buy a $400,000 house. Okay. And people say, oh, you're paying such incredible rates.
Right.
And let's just say theoretically and very theoretically that 2 years from now rates are at 5.5%. Okay. So a house that you could have bought at $400,000 at 6.5%, your payment, this is taxes and insurance only, it's not everything else, is around $2,500 a month. If you wait 2 years, let's say that, you know, you experience 5% a year, so it goes up to $440,000, mm-hmm. and the rate is 5.5%, your payment's $2,500, mm-hmm. because you're paying on a bigger number. And you lost out on $40,000 worth of growth. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, stop this conversation about wait and then buy and then wait, you know, be patient. You're being so patient as a renter, be patient as a homeowner,
right?
You know, I mean, it's just, and you know, and again, as a 30-year-old, the perspective is, this is what I want to do. As a 55-year-old, the perspective is, well, it's just life is going to happen. Right. And so it might work out the way you want. It most likely won't. I mean, it might be sooner. It might be later. It, you know, you might love your neighbors. You might, you know, you just never know. You got to get started. That's just the, you know, get started. And that doesn't mean start building the house in 30 days. Like I said, this is a process. And, you know, we advise people over long periods of time on how to achieve home ownership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that. And one of the questions too, I was, you know, in my head, I'm like, okay, well, how much, you know, does it cost to build a home?
Yeah.
You know, and like with that price, you know, obviously we've talked about maybe sub $500,000 is, mm-hmm. is definitely achievable. Mm-hmm. But like, how much down do you need? Like, how much money does somebody have to start the process, you know, with fees, grants, closing costs, upgrades through the building process? Like,
yeah,
what's realistic?
Yes. And again, I want to be very careful because every situation is different, yeah, right?
Absolutely.
But, you know, right now we're seeing lenders that I work with a lender right now that they have a 3% down program and the homeowner has to come up with 1%. So $5,000 for on a $500,000 house. And then the lender contributes the other 2% up to, right now, that number is $7,000. Oh. Now you have to be income qualified. I think the cap is 94,000 to 95,000 household income, or whoever applies. You know, it doesn't have to be both people applying if you can afford it. So the entry point is extremely low. And then on closing costs, you know, again, they typically say, you know, kind of that 2% used to be the kind of the number. I think that number is that's a very flexible number now. Mm-hmm. But again, with my new construction network, I mean, I go to the builders and I'm like, we're going to kick in for closing costs, and I'm going to kick in for closing costs, and the mortgage company is going to kick in for closing costs. We have to offset some of these expenses because cash is that's the number one obstacle for people. So, you know, I don't think we're going to be able to rely on the government to create affordable housing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just, they seem very poor at doing that, whether it's on the local level. And again, the local level is really trying to manage now, right? And just, we need units. Which is it's legitimate. It's just not necessarily the direction that I wish it would go. Offsetting, that's kind of what the conversations are about, is what is it that you need? So we're going to see, I was talking to a lender the other day, and they were talking about, we're going to do a 1% program and our grant's going to be $15,000. Uh-huh. Well, we'll see if that's true or not. And I just want to explain the difference between a grant and what you can get from the state. So there's state money and federal money for first time home buyers and first generation buyers and things like that. It's great, but you do have to pay it back.
Right.
So when you go to close, when you go to sell, people always forget. Oh yeah, by the way, I owe $10,000 that I got from the state when I bought the house. And there's different programs. Some of them are forgiven. Some of them are not. These are just grants. They're at the day of closing. That money is forgiven. So it just increases the entry point. I'm not sure that I'm doing an effective job of answering your question, but those are some specific examples of what we can do to offset it, what it actually costs. The closing costs, it depends on the mortgage lender you use. It depends on there's just variables involved in that, but it does take some cash. And that is the, and part of the process when we talk is, once I get kind of a baseline understanding of where you're at, I'm going to, if it's feasible, I'm going to hand you off to a mortgage person that's going to answer those questions specifically. And again, because of the volume that we do with our builders and with our lenders, they're going to take very good care of my clients. Because if they don't, we switch mortgage people. I've done it. And I've switched builders. If the process doesn't go the way that I think that it should, I'm kind of the gatekeeper in the process. And again, I'm okay with that. And, a lot of people aren't, but I'm okay with that.
Well, yeah, I have a couple questions.
Yeah.
One, just skipping ahead, like when you are representing somebody, who is you, who are you working for at that point?
Yeah, that's a good question. So again, I want to be, I'm not sure what the rules are. I might get my license yanked by the end of this. But when you're working with new construction, if it's a buyer that's represented by another agent, just like any transaction, that agent is representing that buyer. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I'm going to help that agent if they're new and they don't understand the process. I'm going to help that agent through the process because ultimately it's what we want. You got to close the house, mm-hmm. right? I mean, none of us make any money. None of us achieve our goals if we don't close the house. So we're going to work in coordination with those agents, even if they don't have experience. And the builders that I work with have a very streamlined process for making selections and things like that. It's just not as complicated as people think. Mm-hmm. One of the you asked me before about one of the challenges, and that would be one of the challenges too. It's just not as complicated as it can be, but not. Not the way we do it.
Yep.
If I'm representing the buyer and the seller, kind of the conversation I have, and I have this conversation with the builders, is this is what they do for a living. So, legally I represent both. I know, again, the builders that don't put gutters on houses, the builders that don't do this, the builders that do this, the builders that, and it's okay if they don't do that, as long as you know it and explain it to the client. Mm-hmm. It's when they move in and they go, we don't have gutters. and the agent goes, calls me up and says, they don't have gutters. I'm like, yeah, I know. There's no gutters included in that house. Right. You know, and versus I know that stuff about, you know, different builders that I work with have different packages that they do. Yep. Doesn't mean you can't add gutters, but it's not a part of the price.
Right.
So those are so in that situation, you know, you're representing the buyer in helping them understand what's included and what's not included, but you're also representing the builder and saying, you know, we can upgrade these things. We can increase those, but you are representing both sides. But the builder, you know, quite frankly, there's, you know, typically not a whole lot of negotiation that goes on. I mean, the price is kind of what the price is. Okay. So, and the builder does this, you know, for a living. You tend to lean more towards protecting the buyer.
Yeah, it makes sense. So going back a little bit here, to kind of what we were talking about, if I'm looking at building again with a specific scenario of getting out in 5 years, you know, knowing, you know, just again the unknowns of the future, like, you know, if something happened and it tanked, like I wouldn't get out of it in 5 years, but you know, if things just kept going up 4 to 6%, you know?
Yeah.
And what would be a better investment strategy? The least amount of money down I can by leveraging, you know, good debt, or throw 20% down, skip the interest, you know, of the mortgage insurance and, you know, go about it that way. And then in 5 years, get out. What would you recommend as a better investment?
Yeah, well, you know, your payment's going to be less the more you put down. Your interest rate's going to be better the more you put down. You know, a 3% down program, the banks are taking more risk, so you're going to pay a higher rate. It really depends. You know, if you say, you know, we have 20% and then that leaves us with $4 in our savings account, I would say, you know, go less, do a 5% or a 10% or something like that. If you say, you know, we're putting 20% down and we still have, you know, good assets, to fall back on if we need to, the more you put down, the better you're going to do rate wise, the better you're going to do. There's no question about it. The combination of down payment and interest, and credit score is one of the big drivers of the rate that you get. And that's when people ask me, you know, what rate do we get? That is a complicated question. And right. You really can only discover that by going through the process. I can tell you what the current, you know, great credit down payment, interest rate is, but for your specific scenario, you really have to meet with a mortgage person, and you have to meet with the right mortgage person.
Yeah. So then why do you hear people say or talk about, like, you want the least amount down because, like, leverage somebody else's money to make money?
Yeah. And again, we kind of talked about that before, you know, in real estate, you can leverage your money differently than you can, say, in the stock market. You can, for 20% down, you can control $500,000. So for $100,000 down, you can control $500,000 worth of assets, right? Mm-hmm. However, you know, The beauty of real estate is that you can do 3% down, 5% down. And you know, for some people, that means that they can own a boat. That means that they can have a cabin. That means that they can buy new cars every 3 years, which, by the way, shame on you. You know, my wife and I, we buy nice cars, but, you know, my car is almost at 100,000. So we buy nice new cars, but I drive them for a while. I buy what I want. But that consumer debt,
my brother, I mean, would agree with you.
Yes. So, the you know, again, it's a generational thing where, but at some point you go, okay, am I going to upgrade my car? Am I going to buy a house? Right. You know, and that conversation becomes easier when you get maybe a little bit older. Mm-hmm. It just depends on your situation. If you're a consumer, if you want to go on vacations and you want to do if buying a house really isn't going to change your lifestyle that much, you probably want to look at putting less down and keeping more cash.
Mm. Yeah, it makes sense. I like that because I, you know, I think, again, it just depends on everybody's situation and what they got going on and what their debt is and how much they make.
When we were growing up, or when I was when I was your age, one of the big books, and it had been out for a while, but it was The Millionaire Next Door. And the concept of The Millionaire Next Door was, I believe the example of the person was, a plumber or electrician, something like that, a blue collar person. And he just lived in his house for a long time. And he bought used cars. You know, he didn't buy a new car as well. You know, I buy new cars. But it was just the whole idea of what's important to you. You know, what's in, you know, is it getting, you know, so right now, my wife and I, we own a 5-acre lot that we want to build on. And I can't make the numbers work either, you know, and I've got the equity and I've got, and I'm 55 years old. It's time for me to maybe build my, you know, last house. And it's just not the right time yet, you know. And so you got to have patience. You got to, you know, I mean, life just isn't on a calendar. Mm-hmm. It just isn't. And, you know, if you're happy with other things in your life, you're going to be fine in your house. If you have to wait another year or two, I mean, come on. It is what it is.
Right. You know, I want to kind of move into like the team, you know, like if you're going into, you know, build process, what does that look like? If you're going to build, do people need a realtor? You know, first off.
Yeah, so that's a great question. One of the myths out there is that you're going to save money if you don't work with a real estate agent. And I can't speak for every builder, but a lot of the builders that I work with, they do not discount the price if you don't work with a real estate agent. And if you think about it, you know, real estate is math, right? Ultimately, it's math. And so if you're building in a subdivision and you know, with an agent, it costs $500,000, and without an agent, it costs $450,000, and the builder builds it for $450,000, good luck getting the rest of your houses in that subdivision appraised. You can't do it. You just can't do it. It's just, it's foolish business, and builders are not foolish business people. So, they're going to make more money, which is fine. But B, they're also protecting the future buyers. And we are running, I've never seen appraisal issues like we're seeing right now. And the appraisers, the banks are holding the appraisers very accountable, to the process. And I've never had new construction even remotely not appraised before. And I've had it a couple of times this year. And then we have to figure out solutions, around that as well. But, so that's one of the, I think that's one of the great myths is that you're really going to save a lot. And again, the builder's doing way more work if you're not represented by an agent. They are the agent. You have an agent. it's the builder instead of the real estate agent. So they're doing way more work. Yeah. And you know, are there situations where a builder might discount? Yes. But, you know, again, if you work with a builder and he discounts in a subdivision and it screws all the other builders, he's not buying many lots in that subdivision anymore. That's a real thing is, you know, you can't undercut everybody. It's just bad business.
Yep. So what do you, even talking about that, like, what do you look for when you pick a builder, you know, cause you have some preferred people that you work with, you know, is that what people have to use or how do you find a, you know, builder that you
want? Yeah. To work with? So have to use, no. I will tell you that me, you know, I have a variety. So we have builders at the $400,000 price point and we have builders at the multi-million dollar price point. Mm-hmm. But me understanding their process so that I, you know, people, we can get into all the minutiae you want about the home, the new construction process, and I'm never going to be able to share with you every variable, right? But I've gone through almost all the variables. So again, you know, okay, this, I mean, I have clients that I meet that I'm like, okay, personality wise, there's no way I'm taking them to this builder. I mean, they're going to fight like cats and dogs. And then there's another builder that, I don't care. You know, he's just like, whatever. And so maybe that's so it goes into a lot of things. But again, you know, I know that when I take you to this builder, you're going to spend 4 hours twice making selections. right? It's a very streamlined process. And if you don't want to make selections, we'll make the selections. Mm-hmm. You know, we have standard packages, different things like that. You can customize anything with the builders that I work with, but we also have, you know, there's just, you know, there's only so much. A house is a box. It's got four corners. There's only so much you can do with those four corners in this price point. But then I have other builders that it's fully custom, you know, and everyone I work with is semi-custom. You can move walls. You can do, you know, you can do the things that you want. But very seldom do we just sit down with a blank piece of paper and start drawing a house. You know, it's based off of something.
Yep.
So again, that's really, you know, when I hear these horror stories, they're not horror stories. When I hear stories about things that didn't go well in the new construction process, it's, you know, the agent didn't necessarily have a relationship with that builder, didn't really, I don't even know how they choose who they work with. And again, I've worked with builders that I'm just like, oh yeah, this is the last house we're doing together. So it's, you know, it's 20 years of experience. Yeah. It's just 20 years of who goes on callbacks, you know, who does the job after the checks are cashed. Mm. And if they don't, you know, again, I do a lot of business with these people. They're going to take care of my clients.
Right, right. No, it makes a lot of sense.
So then what I, you know, one of the things too is like, you know, when you're looking at building, I think some of the importance is like your lot, like where's your location?
Yeah.
You know, things like that, especially for the resale value, you know, it's like, is it somewhere where you want to be? Is it a good spot that, you know, is desirable?
Yeah.
Like, how do you go about, like, making sure a lot is a good choice?
Yeah. You know? So one of the great benefits, and again, when you ask me the benefits, you're fleshing those things out very well. Thank you. One of the great benefits of new construction is you get what you want where you want, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, in the existing market, you meet with a buyer and it's not the right house. You say, okay, I'll call you in 3 months when another house comes up. Yeah. That fits your, I mean, there's no inventory.
Right.
There's just not a lot of selection. And again, the cost of waiting on those things, when the rates go down, prices are going to go up. I mean, they're not going to stay flat. I mean, it's just as the affordability goes up, the prices go up, and all of a sudden now you're in multiple offers again. You know, that sucks. It sucks for everybody. It sucks for the seller. It's everybody. It's stressful. And right now we're just not in that environment. So, when it comes to, you know, when we talk about houses under 400,000, that's a pretty tough goal in Rochester. Yep. Right. But you know, I have access, I either own or have access to dozens of lots outside of the Rochester market as well. So, you know, if a lot in Rochester is 125,000 and a lot 10 minutes from here is 80,000, $45,000 difference, are you willing as an investment to get into it? It doesn't mean you have to live in this community for the rest of your life. Are you willing to drive 10 minutes a day longer, which quite frankly, you know, I live in Northwest Rochester and I have friends that live 10 minutes in town, small towns. They'll get to downtown before I do, mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, that's kind of the, okay, this is your price point. You know, I know the subdivisions in the surrounding 30 miles. I can help you align with, you know, what's available and things like that. So the price drives a lot of it, but you know, new construction, it's typically closer to parks. It's typically young, more young family environment. There's 55 and older communities. There's, you know, so you can be very, there are lots in different price points available in all the school districts in Rochester and then all the smaller towns as well. So.
Yeah. How long does it usually take, you know, from start to finish? You know, if we were like, hey, you know, we want to do this and the numbers make sense and we're approved, it's like from finding your lot to selecting a builder, building it, you know, what is a, and I know it can range.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I think that the permit to close process is, you know, 5 months, depending on the size of the house, you know, 4 months, 6 months, 7 months. Of course, it can be very much longer if it's depending on the cost of the build. The variable is the client between the first conversation and the permit process. You know, how many questions do you have? How many times are we re-looking at, you know, so some people it's, you know, it's literally like one or two meetings. You know, it's most people, honestly, it's one or two meetings. It's really not that complicated of a process. again, in the price point that I typically work in, you know, it's not about customizing. We're not building dream houses. Mm-hmm. We're building entry level investments. Mm-hmm. And we're helping you create generational wealth. And that's the focus. It's not, you know, so I would say that the process can take anywhere from 30 days to 90 days, typically. Yeah. But once you get the permit, it's about 5 or 6 months, to close on the house.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's like when they're actually building.
Yeah. That's like from literally the permit. So you can dig the basement to, the sod going in.
So what kind of, you know, when I think you mentioned it a little bit earlier, you know, with the customization, sub-$500 realistically, you know, is it your paint finishes? Is it your lighting and countertops? And do you can move some walls, or like what kind of customization is like realistic?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. So, you know, again, back in the day when I was painting, you know, the new construction used the cheapest paint available. You used cheap windows. It was cheap materials, you know, and whether it was a nice house or not, the materials sucked. Mm-hmm. Now the standard packages, the consumer is just so much more sophisticated now. Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, I know they're using better paint when they, you know, they're, you know, countertops in a $400,000 house, you're getting granite countertops. You know, it's not, you can get cheaper countertops, but that's not the standard because people won't buy it. Yeah. You know, you're getting walk-in tiled showers now. It's unbelievable. And so you can make a bedroom bigger, you can make a bedroom smaller, you can, you know, more what's common is like, okay, we're going to blow out the back wall 2 feet. You know, and you don't do 1 foot because it costs the same to do 2 feet because it's all about the trusses, right? Mm-hmm. Again, does your agent know that? So right. We're talking about adding 2 feet. So we're adding, you know, let's just say 100 square feet. And let's just say as a number that is wildly variable, let's just say it's $250 a square foot. So you just added $25,000 to the cost of your house, mm-hmm. but you made every room in your house better, yep. You know, and fit your, yep. So, you know, we've got this floor plan, but you can afford to do this. So let's look at how attractive this floor plan again for yourself while you're living there and for your resale. So some people, the box has to be this size. This is what they can afford. And then a lot of people, you know, so you select your own lights, you select your own flooring, but it's, you know, it's not a huge box, you know, you have a lot of selections, but really there's, you know, I mean, there's just stuff that's in style. There's, you know, and there's always people to guide you through that process and say, this is what people are buying right now. You know, that you go to the lighting store, you're not just wandering around, you're meeting with somebody to, mm-hmm. to talk about that, that works with that builder, you know, and things like that. So.
When you finish a home build and, you know, you move in, what does like warranties, you know, look like with, you know, maintenance on things,
yeah.
or if stuff cracks or chips or.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, the whole house is warrantied for 1 year. You know, pretty much anything. The cosmetic stuff, I mean, if you put a big, you know, dent in your wall, you know, buy some spackle and paint. You're going to fix that yourself. The builder's not necessarily going to come back for that. But you know, everything is warranty. And then you have manufacturer warranties, you know, mm-hmm. so, you know, your appliances are going to have warranties that extend past that 1 year. Your furnace is, you know, typically 5 to 10 year warranties on certain things. Mm-hmm. So you've got the manufacturer warranty. So the whole house is kind of for a year. So if you're, you know, one of the big ones is in Minnesota is concrete, right? Mm. You know, what's the guarantee on concrete? I guarantee it's going to crack. I mean, there's just no, I mean, it just, you know, if you don't want your concrete to crack, build in Arkansas, yep. You know, I mean, as long as there's frost, it's going to crack. But then there's a 2 year warranty on electrical and plumbing. So if anything happens with your electrical plumbing, and then in the structure of your house, there's a 10 year warranty. So for some reason your foundation starts to sink and your house cracks in half. There's a 10 year warranty. I've never even come close to anything like that. I've never had a client go to arbitration, existing or new construction, on anything. Mm-hmm. People in Minnesota are very honest when they sell their houses and things. It's a pretty darn clean process.
How many, like, even roughly, like, homes do you think you've helped people build?
You know, triple digits. Yeah. You know, over 100, less than 200 would be my guess, something like that. I don't really know. You know, right now we've got active and being built, it's got to be 15 ish, something like that. You know, again, the builders that I work with, you know, one of them builds triple digits a year. So they definitely have the ability to expand. They have land available. You know, I would say that right now, the capacity for builders is there's growth potential there. Mm-hmm. that they can take it on.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think it's good to know, like, you know, way early on in our conversation, we talked about just the whole, who are you listening to? You know, it's like, I think you mentioned even on, like, social media where people are just talking to each other, and it's like, well, go ask a professional.
Yeah.
But now there's two people saying, hey, I'm a professional. So it's still, like, the who is the actual trusted person that I need to go and talk to, and I think, you know, that's important to go, like, hey, this is my first rodeo.
Yeah.
You know, like, we've been doing this for a long time. We've helped a lot of people go through this same process, you know, buy it, sell it, build it, you know, and you'd probably get into the next one, you know, after that.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important too.
Yeah, it is. And I think that, you know, again, there's, especially with new construction, there's a lot of variables that go into it. There's experience, but there's also just, I will say that there's going to be, if we go into a market that is potentially contracting, and I think that that's a fairly realistic possibility. You know, I met with a client yesterday, and they said, you know, what do we want to make sure about the person that we hire? And I'm like, in this market, in their house in particular, make sure it's someone that was in the business in 2008, 2009, and 2010, because, you know, that was, every appointment was problem solving. I remember one day I went, it just happened this way, but I went on 5 listing appointments, and all 5 of them were losing their house, and 2 of them were going through divorces. It was the most draining day of my life. Mm-hmm. And again, if you've gotten into the business since in like the last 10 years, you've never seen a down market. You've never seen the challenges. You don't really know from a firsthand experience what this looks like. So, you know, there are some advantages. You know, I don't need to sell a house next month to pay my bills, you know, and that's, I saw a stat recently that in the National Association of Realtors last year, 74% of people in the association did not sell one house. Mm. 74%. Isn't that insane?
That's crazy.
You know, they used to talk about the 80-20 rule that 20% of the people do 80% of the business. Now with technology and leverage and things like that, I mean, I think it's closer to 5% do 95% of the business, mm-hmm. you know, and Rochester has some phenomenal agents. There's no question. But there's some not phenomenal agents too, you know. So, you know, talk to both of them. I guess the answer is talk to both of them and see which one, you know, you're a better fit for personality wise, education wise, different things like that. I'm never afraid of, you know, people say, well, we're going to interview a couple agents. Great. Yeah. You know, great. And if there's something that another agent tells you that you thought was great, tell me about it. I mean, maybe we do it and I didn't mention it, or maybe we should do it. You know, I spend a fair amount of my time educating myself. I have 2 national coaches, one for real estate investing and one for house sales. So I'm getting information nationally. I'm not trying to duplicate what's going on in Rochester. Mm. You know, that box is very small, typically. And so, you know, and learning about technology, you know, my staff, I have a person that does the contract to close, because that's just complicated process now. You know, a single agent, they got to take care of all that stuff. So they're working on now business while they're working on closing. I'm not smart enough to do it. I know that. And you know, I have a, we recently hired a wonderful assistant that, you know, she's 20, in her mid 20s. So she's Gen Z. That's the population that I want to talk to, is Gen Z. Well, what's the best example of Gen Z? You know, I want to have someone that says, okay, if we do this, would you open this email, you know, and stuff. And then we just recently, I just hired a social media person, a virtual assistant, full time to do social media.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, it's important, but it's, you know, it's time consuming. You just can't do it all. So the whole idea of teams is going to be, you know, and there are teams in Rochester that are 20 people. And then there's, you know, what I would call like the small and mighty teams that are three or four people, and they've got admins and maybe buyer's agents and things like that.
So, yeah.
It's a complicated business. It really is. And there's a lot of things that go into it. And you know, believe me, we're not overpaid. You know, it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of responsibility too.
So, you know, we hit on quite a bit, you know, today, and a lot of different questions that, you know, I've had. And but I also want to give you opportunity, like anything that I didn't ask, you know, as we kind of close here too, is like, what information do you think that we missed that would be good to cover, at least, you know, if someone was, again, listening to this, that's very curious about what it is, you know, what does it look like to buy a home? How realistic is it in the next few years to do? What does that person maybe need to understand that we haven't covered?
I think that ultimately the message that I want to send out to particularly renters, people that haven't owned a house before, and people whose parents never owned a house, so they just don't understand the value of it and things like that, is it's so one-on-one. It's just so one-on-one. You one of the challenges with online and these podcasts and things is that we're doing broad brushstrokes, right? So I think the biggest thing that people can do is start communicating with the right people about it. And so I don't know what your timeline is. You don't know what your timeline is. I probably have a better idea. But so one of the things that I just encourage people is, let's have a Zoom call. You know, let's have a phone call. Let's talk for 15 minutes. I can probably tell you in 5 minutes whether it's a realistic option or not. But, you know, I'll talk about what I'm looking for in a client, because that's where I'm at in my career, is I'm interviewing you as much as you're interviewing me, believe me. So I want people that are motivated to change the course, the financial course of their family. I want people that pay their bills. I want people that have a job, or, you know, have the prospects for a job, or want to have a job. I don't care if you're 3 months out or 5 years out. I don't care. I enjoy it. I enjoy the process. I love working with young people. I have four kids that are young people. I enjoy bringing people along. And so I think that to answer your question, I don't think there is an answer for your question. I think that it's a very one-on-one specific conversation about your circumstances. And, you know, how do we build this? You know, we're customizing the process for individual buyers, and they all look kind of the same, but they're all different too. They all have, you know, we're kind of semi-custom, right?
Yeah.
You know, so we have the four walls, but the walls have to change a little bit depending on the client needs and things like that.
So for you and your process, it could really be a 10-15 minute intro call just to get a baseline on where somebody's at, you know, and what they're trying to do. Just understand again, like, are we a good fit? Is this realistic?
Yep.
Is this a good idea? And
yep.
From there, more to like a start the process, or at least a longer conversation after that.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's, you know, there are people that just income, they're not going to qualify. Right. I mean, they're just not going to. If you pay your bills and whatever, you know, you just don't make enough money to really have it. It doesn't make sense for you. However, you know, what does that look like 3 years from now? you know? So, yes, I think that it takes a very short conversation. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that conversation, you're always going to have action steps. Yep. I'm always going to give you action steps. And if
one of you're 3 years out, it's like, this is what needs
this
to happen.
This is what
you know, to be able to do.
Yeah.
This.
So that 15 minute conversation, if you're motivated, if you have a job and you pay your bills, that 15 minute conversation leads to a, you know, probably a 60 minute one-on-one in the office conversation, mm-hmm. Where we really just get into it a little bit deeper, understand, you know, what might be your best options. Do you have to live in Rochester? Are you willing to live outside of town? You know, what is your price point? Does new construction make sense for you? Is it existing? What is it? And then it's, you know, you're handing it off. After that, it's, we got to go to the mortgage person, right? Mm-hmm. We got to get you pre-qualified before we go to the builder. So I do the legwork before we walk them into the builder's office, and then we meet with the builder. And you know, I you know, largely lead those conversations because I'm the one that understands the client at that point.
Yep.
And I understand the seller. I understand their process that this is where this person is a good fit for you, as the builder. So again, it's a process. Yeah. And you're advising people from the initial conversation and then, okay, does it make sense to take the next step? Or are you 2 years away from the next step? You know, and it doesn't have to be a 15 minute conversation. It can grow into, but it can be as short as it's not, there's no cost. There's no obligation. It's just a conversation.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. I'll tell you that, you know, when you and I were, when we first met, right. Yeah. We met over Zoom and we started talking about your business, and I just get excited, right? And so I start talking about, you know, home ownership and new construction. I didn't even know that you didn't own a home at the time.
Yeah.
And I could just see your eyes got a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. And you started asking questions. And that process is so exciting for me because I see it building in the client.
Right.
And then when I say, hey, you know, would you like to take a look? Yeah, I would like to take a look at it, you know, or they go, gosh, I need to take a look at this even before I, you know, and that's the joy that at my age and, you know, that's the joy that I get out of the business is just seeing that transformation of, wow, I'm so thankful that I met this person because this person is telling me something completely different than what I've heard from other people.
Right.
And that's my Jones, man. I love it. And you know, because I love it, I'm good at it. And,
right.
You know, I invest time, I invest money in being good at it. So.
I love it. Well, Peter, I really appreciate you coming on today. This is super informational. I love just understanding what's going on. And, you know, I think, again, this is one of those things where there is a lot of just unknowns out there.
Yeah.
And,
there's one stat that I want to make sure that we say before the end. I want to make sure that this doesn't get lost. I recently researched, the average net worth of a renter in the United States. Do you want to give a guess on what you think that is?
Average net worth of a renter, single or,
just yes, whatever.
So I don't even know.
Again, your impression of what it would be is probably what other people's impression.
Yeah.
Throw a number out.
75,000.
You're going to be wrong, so throw it out. I'll correct you. I'm the expert here.
That's right.
So the average net worth of a renter in the United States is $10,400.
Really?
Okay.
Wow.
What do you think is the average net worth of a homeowner in the United States?
$400,000. Wow.
$400,000.
Dang.
40 times.
That's
so
insane.
You hear all these conversations about generational wealth, right? And this, the wealth gap and the wealth disparity. And every generation, that wealth disparity is going to get worse. Because if your family is renting, and there are people that have to rent, there's just no question about it. But if your family is renting, you're not. How do you get to the next level? Mm-hmm. You know, at some point, you know, and again, you know, you and I, that doesn't mean our net worth, that's an average, it's a national average. Mm-hmm. But the only variable in that is home ownership.
Yeah.
It's the equity in your house that you just can't get as a renter. I have renters. I own rental properties. I have renters. And I'm like, dude, you got to buy a house. You know, you pay your bills. You take care of my house. You know what you're doing. You got to buy a house. But there's just a lot of obstacles for people in their lives about that. It's not a straightforward equation. Mm-hmm. So
from an investment and a wealth standpoint, you have to own a home. You have to get a home at some point.
Yeah.
It's just a good idea. But then even just lastly too, like, again, you talking to your kids, you know, when they're in a spot where building is financially like a good option.
Yeah.
Like, would you still push them to build versus buy if they were in a spot where they could afford it?
Oh, there's no question. Okay. There's no question that because of my kids' education level and where I know that they're going to be able to go income wise eventually, I would say that, you know, if you have to, you know, new construction is the best avenue for you. And, you know, again, I have one of our kids, she wants to buy an older house and renovate it. And I'm like, you know, great. But that's not a good business investment at this point, because it's so expensive to do it. So, there's no question. And she loves living in an apartment. She has no, you know, it's a nice apartment. She spends a lot of money on it. And I'm like, okay, well, you don't want to go from that to stripping wallpaper off the walls on your weekends. You know, right. People are just too busy. They don't do it anymore.
So. Yeah. But some might get into it not knowing that, or not knowing what it's going to cost to actually. And
some people, it's the right thing. Yeah. It's just what they want to do.
And there's definitely savvy people that are like, I mean, they love a project, you know, even younger people.
Yes, yes.
But I think a majority for sure is just like, give me the no maintenance and something like that.
You know, when I first got into the business, when you put into a listing, you know, this house, invest your sweat equity. That was a benefit. was a positive. Now you're, do not put in your house that needs sweat equity. When we were raising our kids, we went to church on Sunday, but otherwise we pretty much had our schedule. Well, now starting when they're four, they're going off to sports and they're going out, they're doing all this stuff and they're spending their money on that, which is great, investing in their kids, but they're also investing so much time. They just don't want the complication of owning a house. And again, that goes back to the lifestyle choices that they're making. And I think that those choices to travel and work from abroad and whatever, awesome. I mean, I wish I would have had the opportunity to do those things that, you know, when I was at age, but at some point, you know, you are going to become a actual adult. And, you know, it's like college is like 10 years now, you know, but at some point, you know, people are going to transition into that. And we're getting to that point where people, it just makes so much more sense and people are educating themselves on it and just get started with the conversations. That's it.
Love it.
Yeah.
Well, let's wrap it up on that, Peter.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you coming in today.
Yeah. And
this was super helpful.
Yeah.
Had a blast.
Thanks for the opportunity. Thanks for the, I'm looking forward to our relationship going forward. And,
yeah.
And,
we'll check in a year from now and see if I'm in a house. So,
well, we're going to check in 3 months from now when he starts the process. That's right. His permit process is November 1st. You know, and you know, I'm excited for you. However that works out, I love taking people. They don't all work out, but it's fun to find out. So
awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks again.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
And as always, thank you so much for watching or listening or however you consume in these podcasts. I hope that you got a ton out of this podcast. I know I did. I'm very excited to start looking at this even practically now. If you have ideas or you have different things that would be fun for us to talk about, even topic-wise, you know, what we can do is always go and approach, you know, professionals in these specific industries about certain topics. So if you have anything that you want to learn more about, specifically in the Rochester area, definitely shoot a comment, leave us a line, and we'll see you guys on the next one.